Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, Julia Fellow, and in for John McCure, it's Telly Hughes.
So glad you are with us. We are keeping an eye on the weather. We have an extreme heat warning for all of southeast Wisconsin, and that severe thunderstorm watch just issued until 10 o'clock tonight. But first,
this is the 5 o'clock focus on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
What we want to talk about is what just happened to a news crew. CBS2 Chicago. Racial hatred may have been the motivation with a photographer and reporter. They were at the Adler Planetarium. Okay, I worked behind the scenes there. That is the primo location at the Adler Planetarium that's the safest to be able to have the beautiful Chicago skyline and the beautiful Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very common. And racial hatred may have been the motivation. Here's CBS2 reporter Jermont Terry to explain that at first the people went up to him, up to them. It was a tow truck driver, and he got his dog out and tried to have the dog. He said, attack, attack, and the dog wouldn't do it. So here is the report from CBS2 reporter Jermont Terry.
He walked up and literally was commanding the dog. It came out of nowhere.
These two witnesses visiting Chicago watched as a white tow truck parked directly in front of the CBS News van. At first, a man and a dog got out.
It started racial with the cameraman because he was an African-American male.
The CBS employees and the witnesses say the white or Hispanic men then moved aggressively toward the cameraman, and racial slurs never stopped.
Random hate.
That's how you describe it.
Absolutely.
And when the CBS employee defended himself from the dog, witnesses say that's when the other two men in the tow truck jumped out.
And they were saying, leave the dog alone. And I just feel like, the only thing they thought to do was to just cause as much damage as they could and leave.
They knocked over the CBS news camera, damaging it, then went for the news van.
And they grabbed a cone and just started smashing the van window.
After breaking the windshield, the tow truck took off.
The windshield was smashed. They were dusting off and trying to get fingerprints off of the camera that was destroyed. These news cameras, they're just under $100,000, okay?
Yeah.
Very expensive. About 20 minutes later and a few miles away, the suspects in the same description were brandishing a handgun at people. What a maniac. Police found the tow truck and three people, took off when the truck struck a squad car, and all three were found arrested facing charges. Now, this is especially scary to me because when I was in one of those live trucks, you know, it looked like a satellite truck.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's four sides, three out of the four sides, you're covered. So anyone could just walk up to your live truck and do whatever. And that has happened before. I have a friend who was in Cleveland, a bigger market. And a person came up, brandished a weapon, and she actually testified at the when he was sentenced.
Wow.
And she said, all I thought of was were my two daughters, and all he got was her iPhone.
Yeah.
It's not worth it,
but thank goodness it doesn't happen more often, because when you are a reporter and a photographer out in the field, there's no security, and
no.
You're not, as a photographer isn't, you know, carrying a weapon or anything. So you're very vulnerable, especially when you're trying to work, you're trying to get everything in place and not focus so much
about your surroundings.
And anyone can come up. And I know throughout my 20-year career, there's been some instances where I didn't feel so comfortable and you never know what is going to happen. And there are times where you do need to have your head on a swivel while trying to focus on the job at hand. And so, thank goodness, no one was seriously hurt. But again, it just goes to show how vulnerable, journalists are when they are out in the field.
You never know what's going to happen.
Because you can't pick what story you're going to go cover, and they're all nice neighborhoods or nice areas.
No, we're going to the worst of the worst.
Yes.
Whatever the worst situation that's going on in the city, we're there.
Yeah. And so, and again, without any sort of security whatsoever.
Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we did.
I've never had security.
Really?
No, never. I mean, once I started to work in the NBA and Major League Baseball, I mean, of course, there's a lot of security around. But when I'm working in Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm going to cover whatever, like, no, there's no security for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Exactly. 521 on WTMJ. We're doing an early edition of Reporter's Notebook with Adam Roberts. It airs every Sunday, and he did a really interesting interview. Sometimes you run into people that, when you're talking to them about a crime, and they're the ones that committed it, or maybe are accused of committing it. And that situation happened to a local reporter, and Adam Roberts spoke to her.
I did. So recall a few weeks ago, Telly and Julia, this was back in mid-June. We were following the trial of a man named Kevin Leishvick in Waukesha County, who was accused and ultimately found guilty of murdering his neighbor, Carlos Maldonado, at their apartment complex and then hiding the body just near it. So this is around the Frame Park area in the city of Waukesha. So while representing himself, because Leishvick fired the attorney that had been assigned to him and was, much like Daryl Brooks, recall that case, representing himself, and also much like Daryl Brooks, making outbursts during the court case, constantly objecting to the proceedings, trying to get evidence thrown out, etc. Well, at one point, Leishvick made references to, actually multiple times, Rebecca Clough, a reporter at TMJ4. She's their Waukesha County reporter for Channel 4, who had been covering the case since October of 2024. More on that in a moment. But Leishvick, during his court proceedings, made references to Clough, and at one point made a very unusual request, as Clough details here.
During a break, he asked his standby lawyer to come and find me to ask about being interviewed. You can see in this video, Leishvick is holding up my business card, which he was given by his counsel.
So this was day three of the jury trial, and you can see, we can't see it here, but in the video, Leishvick is holding up a business card to the, it's not his attorney, but there's an attorney assigned, if you're representing yourself, to answer questions you may have about, you know, terms or things you may not understand. If you want some clarification, you're entitled to that if you defend yourself. So he hands this person the business card. They then go and find Rebecca in the hallway during a break and say, hey, he wants to interview you. Ultimately, that interview never happened because he legally can't, as he's involved in his own trial. So that never happened. Now, why was Leishvick making this particular request? Well, Clough, when speaking to me, pointed to her very first interview with him before he was ever even charged with a crime. Now back to October of 2024. Right after Maldonado's body was found, the then 62-year-old Leishvick was in his apartment when Clough was at the complex looking for neighbors who may have seen what happened or had reactions to the news.
I knock on a door in the middle of the hall, and Kevin Leishvick opens the door. 90% naked. If he wasn't naked, he was nearly naked and in a robe. And on top of it, he gave me a look that made the hair on my body stand up, because he gave me a look almost like, hello, I'm excited to see you, in a weird way. And he invited me in, and I said, no, thank you. I actually very much said, no, no. Later on, the police tell me they find a chair with ropes tied to it. They find a hit list in there. They find lists about how they wanted to eliminate people. Not an apartment you would like to be in if you are a single person.
Not at all. So that, again, is TMJ4 reporter Rebecca Clough speaking with me about her experience on this story. And it's interesting, you both were just talking about the situation with the CBS affiliate in Chicago. It's an unfortunate thing, but when we do what we do, safety always has to be in the back of your mind, whether you're out doing a stand-up or knocking on someone's door and you never know who's going to answer.
You better believe it. Yeah, sometimes people are, it's very emotionally charged. And yeah, I have one time in Michigan, I interviewed someone and he took me in. He was the landlord of a trailer park and someone had been murdered. And so he took me into the trailer where the person had been, you know, a tenant had been murdered. And then he was the accused murderer. And there was it's just so eerie when that type of thing happens. And I was at TMJ4 News. That was one of my last few weeks there. And I remember that he was partially naked. And yeah, you run into all of that. It's very bizarre. And I'm really glad that she was safe. Wow. When does Reporter's Notebook air?
Sunday at 10 a.m. Or if you want an early preview of our conversation, you can listen right now. The full episode's available wherever you get your podcasts, or more specifically, WTMJ.com.
From the White House briefing room to the story shaping the country, CBS News Chief Washington correspondent Major Gary.
The Iranians keep saying things that it is a very favorable negotiated settlement on their terms. The White House vociferously denies that.
National perspective, straight answers, right here on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
Major Garrett is with us. Major, we apologize for the news. We're at our annual golf outing, but we're so glad you are with us. You are on the road as well. Major, let me start with this. The experiment. That's how America's fight for independence has been referred. It survived 2.5 centuries. You're a historian kind of guy. When you think about this experiment surviving for so long, what's been the key to our survival?
Our ability to take seriously our founding documents, which is to make a more perfect union, acknowledging from the get-go that we were not perfect at the beginning, that we had things to do and aspirations yet to achieve. And we are, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or someone who doesn't care about politics, if you're an American, you're an aspirational person. You live within this country with aspirations for yourself, your family, your community, and the nation writ large. And that set of aspirations differs from person to person, but that we are an aspirational nation and believe in the ability to better ourselves and our common humanity is what keeps us going and is what has let us survive a lot of very, very trying times.
You know, Major, I was just talking to John about how we are celebrating our 100th birthday for 620 WTMJ. 40% of the nation's age we've been around for the state of Wisconsin. And I think about the freedom of the press. And I know that you've talked to international reporters before. I've talked to some journalists that can't believe that we even have access to City Hall in Milwaukee. I mean, how important is that for the nation for the next 250 years?
It's essential. And let me tell you a couple of things from the Declaration of Independence that underscore that for me. Lots of people have very famous lines from the Declaration of Independence. All the ones that are most known that we repeat in civics class all through middle school and high school, they're all great, they're all lovely, but my favorite of the Declaration of Independence is one sentence. To prove this, meaning why we are separating from Britain, let facts be submitted to a candid world. That sentence is my entire career, everything I've ever tried to accomplish, submitting facts to a candid world. And that's what journalists and a free press do, submit facts to a candid world. That is the essence of what Thomas Jefferson was talking about in the Declaration of Independence, to explain why this tectonic event in human history was about to occur, why the colonies of America were going to separate from Great Britain, because it wasn't something without enormous risk. Everyone who signed that Declaration of Independence knew if they lost the war, lost the battle with the preeminent empire on the globe at that time, Great Britain, they would be killed as treasonous rebels against the empire. And yet they did it anyway. And they explained why, because they believed, as the Declaration of also says, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation, meaning if you are going to do something big, you better have an explanation as to why.
Major Garrett is CBS's Chief Washington Correspondent. So, Major, July 2nd, 1776, Thomas Jefferson says the document's done. 2 days later is when it's signed, it's ratified, it kind of has life breathed into it. Can you give us more perspective on the point you were just making? Because I'm so intrigued. It was England, France, and Spain that ruled the world, with England maybe the most powerful military in the world. And we had a ragtag bunch of guys with muskets who decided, you know what, we're going to put it all on the line. How big of underdogs were the United States?
As big as could be contemplated in any part of the literate world of that era. The biggest underdogs ever, because not only were we poorly armed, we had no training whatsoever, and the British Army was well-trained and well-equipped and well-armed. We had no leadership that was coherent in terms of military strategy. The only thing we had was a sense of ingenuity, a sense of adaptation, and very importantly, knowledge of the terrain. Knowledge of the terrain. We knew where we were going and where it was much better than the British did. And over time, we also obtained something. Support from France. Reluctant at first, then more formidable as time went on. And that support, financial and otherwise, was vital. We don't win the battle against Britain without France first surreptitiously and then publicly backing the revolution.
Major, 250 years after that document, the world we live in is scary in some ways, but not so much different than other trials that we've been through. As we sit here today, are you more optimistic or more worried about the future of our country?
You know, I'm going to fall back on something that's going to sound like a cliche, but I'm realistic. As I believe the founders were realistic, as I believe those who made up the infantry of the Revolutionary War fighting army that George Washington was able to put together. We had very brilliant people at the top writing the documents and creating the aspirational language. But we had people who had jobs, who were recently out of prison, who were basically down on their luck. And they were the core of the revolutionary infantry, people who basically were on their last legs, had nowhere else to go but believe that this country was worth fighting for. And if they won, they would be able to forge for themselves something they'd never been able to achieve, an actual future for themselves. So we came together as a country back then, a lot of ragtag people who did not get along, colony to colony, intellect to intellect, but we had one common goal. And I think if we remember that as Americans, despite all of our differences, regional, ethnic, religious, and otherwise, you focus on the big goal, much, much great things can be achieved.
Man, I'm fired up.
Can I get a mic drop?
Let's go. Giddy up. Man, that's great stuff. Major Garrett is CBS's Chief Washington's correspondent. Check out The Takeout wherever you stream your stuff. I was just looking at it today, actually, right on my phone. Major, we always appreciate it. Man, that was so good.
I know.
Major, thank you.